Welcome to a brand new Feet Up Friday. I, Mr. C, have taken control of this podcast. There will be no more Mrs. Christine anywhere near side podcast shows, for it has come to light, thanks to the insight of Sir Stirling Moss, that women do not have the aptitude to discuss Formula One. They do not have the intelligence or the concentration required to host a regular Formula One podcast, or produce such a thing, or build a Formula One community from scratch to thousands and thousands of listeners. Thanks to the wisdom of Sir Stirling Moss, my mind has been opened and I am putting my foot down. Christine will be around, but she will serve only as totty and crumpet for us to gawp at. That is a single, solitary purpose. Obviously, if you're a female listener, you need to go and find yourself a man friend to understand all the complicated terminology I shall be discussing, including engines and tyres, things that you will no doubt find impossible to comprehend by yourself. With that out of the way, let us get on with my brand new show, all about...
Do you need some show notes?
Oh, hello, Crumpet. No, I'm fine. I've done all my preparation. I need to do this. You don't even need to be here. You are no longer required. Know your place.
Go on then. What's your first story?
I don't have any stories. It may actually be true that you do all of the work for Side Podcast. And in fact, Sir Stirling Moss doesn't know what the hell he is talking about.
It was unfortunate, his comments.
Unfortunate is not the word.
Yeah, that is the word I'm using.
That is the...
Offensive, yes.
Unnecessary?
Yes.
Single-minded, narrow-minded?
All of the above.
I'm quite angry with Sir Stirling Moss.
Yeah, you're angrier than I am, it has to be said.
It wound me up something rotten. It's probably best if we just move on before I say something I very much live to regret.
Let's prove Sir Stirling wrong by letting the ladies back in.
I'm sorry, ladies. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. Most women, I imagine, listen to the show, know a hell of a lot more about Formula One than I do.
It's not been an easy week or so in Formula One, really. Particularly, Formula One's been quite mean to me this week. And people did not enjoy China. And oh my God, haven't we heard about it?
Haven't we just? I had to give up on the side podcast comments during the Chinese Grand Prix. All of qualifying was dominated by people complaining and moaning about
tyres. Qualifying was rubbish, though.
Qualifying was rubbish, but it was endless. And then the race came along and people were moaning and complaining and... All I heard was negative comments throughout. It was like 2 days of just nothing but negativity all around. Fed up to the back teeth of it, I am.
What I would say is, this is like in 2010, when we didn't like what was happening and we moaned about it a lot. Around about the China time, we gave up and stopped talking about it. So I think that if people aren't enjoying what they're seeing, around about the China time, you've given it a go, you're not liking it, maybe it's time to take a step back for the rest of the year.
That is very good advice. In 2010, we did not enjoy Formula One because it wasn't providing the entertainment we desired. And if Formula One is providing too much entertainment for you right now, and therefore giving you negative vibes, maybe you should step back. Step back from the comments and step back from the TV screen and go find something else to do.
Just miss 1 week, see how that feels.
Or two. Or three.
Or three.
It doesn't matter. Personally, without the comments and without the interaction and the feedback from everybody who hates Formula One, I very much enjoyed the Chinese Grand Prix. I may be the only person, the only Formula One fan who enjoyed it, but I really, really liked the goddamn race.
I think, I did think that the second DRS zone made things a little bit too easy. But that being said, that doesn't mean that DRS is just a washout completely and we should get rid of it and oh my God, this is awful. It didn't quite work. They tried having two zones, whereas before they've only had one in China. And it wasn't ideal, but it was still a really good race and I did enjoy it. Not everyone hated it. It's just I think those that aren't enjoying it are quite vocal about
really
it.
Really vocal, yes.
But it should be said that Button, who in particular admitted he had quite a boring race in China, he was on a strategy that meant he couldn't really race anyone. He had to let cars pass him.
But what a drive. What a drive Jensen put in.
Ahead of this race, he said, we're not going to be happy with everything in this sport or in any sport, but I think the racing has been good fun. I was on the receiving end of it in the last race because I was doing less stops and running old tyres most of the race. But if you were doing a three-stop, it seemed like it was a pretty fun race and they were able to push pretty hard. And Massa said, many people are complaining about the Pirellis, but I think they are taking a good direction for the sport. So even if he didn't have the best race, he didn't have the most fun he could possibly have, Button appreciates that it was good for the fans. And Massa thinks it's going well as well. They have to say that because obviously it's their job.
They don't have to say that. They can complain as much as they like. I mean, drivers are not beholden to Pirelli. just look at the Red Bull drivers. They take every opportunity that's available to them to criticise the tyres. So it's not like Massa and Jensen have any stake in the tyre company. They're free to say what they like. I very much thought Jensen's drive put in a fine drive. It was a different strategy. And sometimes he could race. He was on the radio, can I race this guy? And sometimes the call was yes, do. And sometimes the call was no, please don't. And it was a very measured drive. Jensen didn't have the fastest car. McLaren didn't really have hope of scoring decent points without the perfect drive from Jensen, the perfect strategy from the team, decent pit stops. Everything had to come together. Because he was doing something different to everybody else, I thought it added an extra dimension to the race. The kind of extra dimension that we haven't seen in Formula One since refueling was around, whereby you had certain people on one strategy and then another set of drivers on a different strategy interplaying throughout the race. They would cross over as their stops came and went. And we haven't had that. And this, finally, this combination of Pirelli tyres and DRS has revitalized that missing strategic element that I really liked about refueling. It's brought it back into play. And China, it very much felt like we had that back in China.
There was something about the really soft tyres, because they could only be used for a short stint. It was really interesting to see where people would use it. Would they get rid of them at the start? I think Weber came in on the first lap, at the end of the first lap, to get rid of them. Or would they wait to the end? Or try and get rid of them somewhere in the middle? I thought it was quite interesting. And I have been known to say the tyres are boring in the past, so that is progress.
Red Bull are a great benchmark too, because Weber came in very early. He used that less favourable tyre just for that introductory lap, and then Vettel did the exact opposite, and he used the soft tyre to great effect at the end of the race, whereby he clawed back something like 11 seconds.
It was about that.
In four laps. And I remember sitting watching the race with you saying, there is no way, no way on earth that guy
not
is
enough laps.
Claw that gap back in that time. We've seen this so many times. He's going to fall short, no question. But he clawed that gap back with amazing efficiency. And if it wasn't for Lewis Hamilton's incredible defensive tactics of smoking his tyres into the final corner, you may have seen a final corner showdown between the two drivers, and that you would only get that with the type of tyres that they were running in China. There's no other way of manufacturing that kind of finish. It's amazing.
See, you said manufacturing the type of finish. That's what's wrong with it. It's all scripted. It's not sport anymore.
Oh, come on. That was a Hollywood style ending. That wasn't scripted. It wasn't preordained. It was unfolding before our very eyes. I am not down with this purist attitude that Formula One has to be about sitting on the grassy banks watching the grass grow as cars meander past three or four laps apart from each other. I truly have no interest in that. All I want is wall to wall. I say all I want as if, you know, it's a minor request. I just want 1.5 hours of wall to wall entertainment without chance to pause, hesitate, or even just take a bathroom break. That's
it's
what
not
I want.
Much to ask.
That's all I want. I just want to be glued to my television, riveted for the entire duration of the race, please. And I was in China, but without question, there was no point. There was no downtime during that race when I had a chance to take a breath. And that is what I want. And that's why I enjoyed the race so much.
Whilst we're on the subject of tyres, I think in the last show we talked about Ross Brawn's idea for a sacrificial tyre, which I do think is an awesome name. And I think Brawn was posing the idea that it should be there in practice for everyone so that there would be more action out on track and the fans would get to see more. And that is all good. And then I think, thank God for Bob, he might have said we need to give the young drivers an extra tyre and they can fill in the action time. Because we get to see that occasionally during the year, but not all teams do it. Free practice in China was also very quiet, and I think Bernie was on the grid saying, well, he as good as confirmed that Pirelli were going to have to do something and bring a new tyre. And the tyre manufacturers said they would discuss it with the teams, but I don't think anything has been agreed, but there's lots of discussion. Now, they keep referring to bringing in a rookie tyre, and it's really annoying me because it's not a rookie tyre, it's a young driver tyre or a Friday driver tyre. The rookies are the people who are in their first year racing,
right?
And that is something different, and they keep confusing me.
So Esteban is a rookie driver this year, Guido van der Garde, he's a rookie this year.
Yeah.
You have Bottas, who's a rookie, Jules Bianchi is a rookie, and there's one of them, Max Chilton.
Yes.
Yeah, that's your five rookies. Now that is... those drivers are not going to get an extra set of tyres under the proposed suggestions. It's drivers who currently are not on the grid at all. So Friday drivers, which in this case was Heikki Kovalainen on Friday and
Rodolfo Speedy Gonzalez.
Speedy Gonzalez. Those two drivers would be eligible. You're right, it's not a rookie tyre. It's a driver who's not currently on the grid, which I think that was what Bob was suggesting.
Yeah. Initially. So they should call it a Friday driver tyre or a young driver tyre, although they can't really call it a young driver tyre because it's bound to include Gary Paffett. It always does.
The oldest young driver in the world, always called up. I'll tell you who else you might see if this goes ahead. Pedro De La Rosa, he's at Ferrari. He's not on the grid at the moment.
Or Wurz.
It obviously depends how they... Wurz at Williams.
Even Schumacher could come back.
Oh, good Lord. It depends how they frame these regulations. I'll tell you the problem we have here, I think, is Pirelli have said... they've understood that Friday practice is quiet. The cars are only running for an hour of a 90-minute session, and that's a problem. And they're keen, with one eye on the fans and having the sport's best interests at heart, they are keen to make a difference, and they're able to make a difference. So they've said, right, for Spain, for the race in Barcelona, we will go ahead and we will make this batch of tyres. We will leave it to the teams to decide who gets to use them. And herein lies Pirelli's naivety, because they are absolutely assuming the teams will be able to come to some kind of agreement.
That never happens.
That will never, ever happen. And what you can see already at this point, Pirelli will turn up with their fresh batch of Friday tyres. The sacrificial tyre will be available to every team, and nobody anywhere will be able to agree on how to run
it. You should use it.
Well, and it will be wasted. They'll just pack it back up in the truck, send it away, and they'll think, well, that was a waste of time.
Part of the problem is that even one person within a team can't make up their mind, because Manisha Kaltenborn, she has been complaining that Gutierrez has to do his learning out in public because it's his first year and he hasn't had a lot of time testing. So she has said about the idea that you should run Friday drivers, she said, I think it should be done in such a way that it's not an option but a regulatory thing. Otherwise, I don't think many teams will make use of such an option. We see it with ourselves, because if you have a rookie driver who is one of our regular race drivers, do you really want to take away time from them? So on the one hand, she's complaining that Gutierrez didn't get any practice before he joined, really. He didn't get much time in the car before he became a driver. But then on the other hand, she's saying, we don't really want to run a rookie driver unless we have to.
Because he needs the time.
The race drivers need all the time they've got. So you can't have it both ways.
Well, you could have a tyre that was for Friday drivers or rookie drivers this year. So one for Williams, both Marussia and Caterham drivers, and for the one Sauber driver. Also, for any other team who would like to run an additional driver, that might work. Although it is the teams at the back who are most likely to run these extra drivers anyway, so that may not help. What do you think? Of the two options, what would you prefer? Would you prefer every team to have one sacrificial tyre, or would you like Pirelli to try and kill two birds with one stone and also provide some on-track entertainment whilst also giving these young drivers extra track time?
It's a really tricky one. I mean, I can see how the teams are never going to come to a decision, because there are so many options to have. And part of it is also, if you give it to the rookies, then they are getting more time than all the other drivers. And so if someone is in their second year, they're not massively experienced. It doesn't seem fair that someone in their first year is getting an extra tyre. And if you think back to, say, Lewis Hamilton was supremely successful in his first season, why should he be getting an extra tyre? He probably doesn't need it. He's quite amazing anyway. So that doesn't seem fair.
On the other hand, if you're a fan who's paid to go to a racetrack and you're sitting in the grandstands expecting your favorite driver, who is more likely statistically to be a top driver, Fernando Alonso, Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, if that's who you're waiting to see drive, and instead of those guys coming out, what you see is a bunch of GP2 drivers or whoever happen to be allocate the tyres, if they're the guys circulating, you may as well be watching a GP2 race.
Yeah.
So what's the point of that?
Ferrari.
You want to see Formula One drivers in Formula One cars, and you want to see your favourite stars.
Ferrari and McLaren and Red Bull, they don't need to run Friday drivers because they have teams testing their drivers for them. I mean, Red Bull take their drivers from Toro Rosso. That's the way it works. They don't need to run a Friday driver. They've got a whole other team doing that for them.
Agreed. But what you want to see is the Red Bull stars out in their cars doing laps. Pirelli, again in their naivety, which it kind of feels like it is, they're trying to solve all the world's problems with one set of tyres. And you are never going to be able to solve that problem, and you're never going to be able to solve that within Formula One whilst leaving the decisions to a group of people who are all direct competitors with each other and to try and come up with some kind of unanimous agreement. That's none of that's ever going to happen, and I cannot, with the best will in the world, I just can't see this working out in time for Spain. There's too many variables and too many question marks still to be resolved.
There may have been agreement between eight of the teams, though, because Paul Hembree has said that eight teams have approached him and said they don't want to change the tyres in the actual race itself rather than practice, because from China, where we had the soft tyres and everyone was complaining that they ran out after a couple of laps, to Bahrain, where we were also supposed to see the soft tyres, suddenly we're not seeing the soft tyres, we are seeing the medium tyres instead. And there's a lot of speculation about why that is, when the change happened, because Pirelli say it happened before China, not as a direct result of that. But regardless, they are saying that eight teams have approached them and said, don't be changing the tyres, we like the way it is. And we think perhaps there are rumours only Red Bull have said, we don't like the tyres. Although I did notice that Lotus have been using the hashtag longer lasting rubber. So they're probably not happy either.
Well, it's in Lotus's favour to stick with the tyres they've got, because they're the fastest car this weekend and they've already won a race. So I don't really understand, unless it's an ironic hashtag. Red Bull presumably are one of the teams, and then Toro Rosso have to do everything Red Bull say, so maybe they've abstained. As for the final team, it could be Lotus, but I don't know if that would make any sense.
But Ferrari do often complain, but then again, they've won too.
No, it's in their favour. No, the only teams who are complaining right now are the teams who think they should be dominating or think they should be doing better as a result of the performance of their car, and are being scuppered by the tyres that Pirelli have bought. And as far as I know, that's just Red Bull. But eight teams is still not a unanimous agreement. You're not going to get eight teams turning up in...
It's more than I would expect.
Yeah, but you're not going to get eight teams agreeing to run the tyres in one fashion in free practice one in Spain, and then the remainder doing something else. You need to have consistency. And it just proves that in Formula One, you're not going to get that.
Those are the big philosophical debates that are going on around Formula One at the moment. We are recording this the Friday before the Bahrain Grand Prix, so we don't know anything that's going to happen over the weekend. It could be anybody's. So there's just a few other things, little bits and pieces we wanted to mention. There's been a bit of upset with between Hamilton and his ex-team McLaren, because there was a question put to Hamilton about how the relations are between them. And he said, I went to see them in Australia, but I also tried to see them in Jerez at the test. And there, Sam Michael threw me out of the garage. That wasn't very positive, and I don't feel very good about that.
Right. But what was he trying to do? What was he doing with poking his nose around the McLaren garage?
Exactly.
During a test.
My first thought, because Amy posted this in the comments and she said, oh, Sam Michael's a big meanie. And I thought, well, not really, because I don't think rival teams should be going into other teams' garages, even if you were there before.
Drivers generally don't poke their noses into other teams' garages. The only time that I can perhaps recall that happening was when Michael Schumacher crashed his car and he had some minor concussion and accidentally walked into the Toyota garage because he mistook their red overalls for his own team's. But
I don't really remember.
Well, no, he nipped. There was no cars in the garage at the time, of course. Now the cars were on track, so there was nothing really to be learned there. But I don't. Apart from that, I don't recall drivers going from garage to garage poking their nose in other people's business.
McLaren's PR person, Matt Bishop, who, by the way, I'd completely forgotten about, the Bish, he said, Sam didn't throw Lewis out of our garage. Rather, he gently guided him out, since our car was being worked on by our mechanics at the time, with a number of its dismantled components clearly visible, which no one from a rival team should see. Lewis knew he shouldn't have been in our garage in the first place, just as all team personnel know they shouldn't enter rival teams' garages. And he said that he had been in hospitality many times and is very welcome. Which I would prefer to go to the hospitality bits anyway, because they tend to have cake and food and stuff.
Well, that's where he should be. I mean, the last person you want to let loose around your garage, if he's driving for another team, is Lewis Hamilton, because he could tweet anything.
and he would.
He already tweeted their telemetry whilst he was with that team. Imagine what damage he could do with a mobile phone and poking your nose around when your car is exposed to him and his lens.
In free practice today, as you mentioned earlier, Heikki Kovalainen, he's back.
Yes.
He has returned.
Ah, we missed him.
Although I know how popular Heikki is and how sad people were that he had left, been forced out of Caterham, I was quite surprised at the overwhelming love there was that he had returned. Just everyone was happy.
I figured this must provide some kind of crisis of conscience for your good self, because he replaced your new favourite driver, Geerta van der Gaard.
Yes.
Who you have accidentally fallen in love with, despite the fact he's not even French.
I don't know how it happened.
No. So, you know, you like Heike. Heike's wonderful and fantastic and big fan of Heike. But also, you know, is your new favourite Geerta. He's replaced him. Replaced him in free practice one.
The thing is, I know that Geerta is rubbish and I can't...
That's hard. What? Okay, yes. He's not... Yeah,
fine. I can't see him seeing out the season with the team, to be honest. Although I do think if he did get replaced now, that is a bit harsh because the races have been quite mixed up. It's been hard for a rookie. But yeah, I can see that they would want to bring Heike back. But we were discussing this at the time and decided that actually it's not so much that... Geerta is rubbish. It's just that Jules Bianchi...
He's not rubbish. Stop saying Geerta is rubbish.
Oh, but, yeah.
The guy hasn't had a chance.
All right.
Jesus, you love him, but you hate him.
Okay.
Tough love.
It's not so much that Geerta hasn't had a chance to shine. It is more that Marussia have Jules Bianchi, who has been awesome.
Yes.
And Caterham perhaps weren't expecting that.
There has been suggestions that the two teams, the two rivals, Marussia and Caterham, planned to merge over the winter, and that didn't come to fruition. Those two teams are only fighting each other this season. They are hanging on for the regulation changes at the end of the year before they can really take the fight to the teams above them. So they've only got eyes on each other in 2013. Therefore, if you were Caterham and you looked at Marussia's lineup and they have Max Tilton, he's a rookie, he's not got much experience, doesn't have a stellar background behind him. And you look at their alternatives, which at the time I think the best placed man was Bratzia. You figure, okay, well, we've got, on our side of the garage, we've got Pick. He can take on Chilton, no problem. We've got Geerta van der Gaard. He's probably a match for Bratzia. We'll be fine. All we've got to do is secure 10th place at the end of the season. We know that Marussia haven't developed their car much. We haven't developed our car much. And we've got comparable drivers. Therefore, this season's going to be a breeze.
Well, they
will ride it out until the end of the season.
They probably thought they had the advantage because Marussia have their double rookie strategy and Caterham had Pick, who already has a year. Now, obviously, a year isn't that much
in terms of Marussia
F1 experience, but it was a year over both of the Marussia team.
This entire strategy, though, blew up in Caterham's face when Force India surprised everybody by signing Adrian Sutil and dropping Bianchi. That allowed Marussia to let go of Reazza in a massive hurry and encourage Bianchi into the fold, which has given them in the first three races a massive advantage in terms of pace and talent and ability over Caterham. Now, Geerta van der Gaard, he's not as rubbish as you seem to be intent on making out.
I feel bad,
but
now.
He isn't a Jules Bianchi, and therefore Caterham are probably looking rather forlornly at the result sheet and seeing where they are currently placed in the season and figuring out that actually neither of their drivers can hold a candle to this guy. And they need to do something about that. And the best thing they can do right now is bring back somebody who could rival Bianchi, and that somebody is most likely to be Heikki Kovalainen. The only other hope they have potentially would be that Sauber give up on Esteban in a hurry, maybe bringing Jules into the fold there. That might be something that would ease a seat swap between Marussia and Sauber, would ease Caterham's woes in that respect. But if that doesn't happen, they've got to do something. Otherwise, they're going to finish this season languishing in 11th and take the financial penalty that brings. And so, if this is all supposition on my part. If that's how you assume things have unfolded, it actually makes an awful lot of sense to bring Heike back now to get him to look at the car.
That does make sense. And I can see him being back in the car full time soon. They tweeted a picture of him in the car and his green helmet matches the green livery this year. So it's like it was made to be.
Is that a sign? I did read that Heike had few complimentary things to say about this year's car. It seems like it's taken a step backwards. And the lack of any development experience of Heike's ability is sorely lacking within the team. So maybe, you know, running him in free practice one in future races might be enough to sort out their chassis woes. Or it might be that they actually have to put him in the race pretty soon.
And in amongst all this driver swapping, not quite related to the back of the grid, how long is it that Perez is going to remain in that McLaren? Because of all the drivers that are rubbish, that one is on a steep learning curve. That's the way I've been putting it all season.
Where did last year's pace go? We know the McLaren has some issues. It's a troubled car, but goodness me, he is making a meal of that drive, isn't he?
I don't remember the last time I saw a McLaren driver so slow and perhaps such a disparity between the two of them.
I do, actually. It was Heikki Kovalainen.
Oh.
When Heikki went up against Lewis Hamilton, there was that level of disparity, but that was a long time ago, and I would have thought that McLaren would have learned from that. It's amazing to see Perez so far off the pace. And I think he complained this week that there was so much criticism of him, but there isn't very much positive. There are very few positive things to be said for his drive. I mean, he hasn't thrown off the road. Well, he did in practice, even then.
In two practice sessions.
But in the race, he hasn't thrown off the road. He did manage to collide with Kimi Raikkonen, but his car remained unscathed.
There are some things that you can't live down, like Karin Chanduk. He managed, what was it, half a lap and then spun it. Perez in China, he spun it in free practice one. And then he spun it again in free practice two. And these kind of things, they give yourself a name, don't they?
Well, practice is the time. If you can't throw a car off the road in practice, when can you throw it off the road? Especially with such restricted testing. There has to be times when you push the limits, and he's obviously not confident in that car, which is understandable given how bad it appears to handle. But the guy, he's solid in the race, but he's solidly out of the points. He's circulating, he's there for certain, but he's not where he should be, or he's certainly nowhere near where Jenson Button is. And I just really thought he would be able to be closer, especially on last year's performances, which were stellar in an underperforming Sauber.
Thinking about it, there was one little ray of sunshine that I did spot. It must have been in China when Button came into the pits quite late after everyone else for the first stop.
Mm-hmm.
And Perez came in the next lap. So I think maybe he was one of the very few last drivers to come in for their first stop. So he had gone a long way on his tyres, which is what we know him for, being light on his tyres.
Yes.
So he has at least managed to make that transition from one team to another.
Yes.
It's just making that work in a way that gets him into the points.
I'm sure we've discussed it before. I'm sure we've said this before, but as long as that McLaren is off the pace, he's not going to be thrown out of McLaren in a hurry. The car is their biggest problem now, and it doesn't matter what Perez does in the meantime. If McLaren solve their current predicament, and they claim that they may be able to solve that by the next race, if their pace picks up, then that's when Perez has to make his move. He has to make some impact on the race and start bringing home some points. The other person probably worth mentioning is Pastor Maldonado, who actually managed to finish a race in China. All credit to the guy for finding the finish line.
And,
it was a long and arduous journey.
Ricciardo also. And when he did finish, he did it really well.
He did. Oh, Ricciardo did a fine, fine job. But in his previous races were scuppered by...
Not his fault.
Yeah, by things beyond his control, whereas Maldonado was absolutely out of control.
I do feel like this race in Bahrain, it's up for grabs. It could be anyone's. It's hard to predict who is going to be fast and who is not.
From what we've seen on Friday, Red Bull appear to be sandbagging. I do not think they've lost as much pace as they would appear to have lost on paper. I suspect the race isn't going to be as good as it could have been had Pirelli had the balls to bring the tyres they claimed they would be bringing. They've capitulated slightly on that score, and that may make the race more processional than otherwise it would have been. But the safe money has to be on the Ferraris or the Lotus, I would imagine. They seem to be the most consistent. And you have Grosjean, who appears happier with the team gave him a brand new chassis. He's obviously not had a great start to this season. He's had troubles and not really been a match for Kimi. I mean, he's not been as bad as Perez, but
he's been in the points at least. It's just the lower end.
He's not been out driving his car. So he's got a new chassis this weekend. So I would keep an eye on Romain. Kimi looks like he's going to do very well. He hasn't got a penalty to take this time. And also Alonso is looking reasonably strong.
Pirelli have said they think it's going to be three stops. A three-stop strategy might be the ideal. There was one thing that I wanted to mention that doesn't fit in anywhere, and I can't remember which race it was about, but Red Bull, they tweeted a message that said, "We broke the record for the fastest pit stop. What can you do in 2.05 seconds? And someone tweeted them back, which they then retweeted to everyone, blink and miss your pit stop, which I just think is true. That's all you can do in 2 seconds is just blink.
That can't be right, though. Did they put all the wheels on that car? Is that actually possible?
I don't think it was about China, because the wheels did fall off that car. Paul Webber, whatever start he gets, he's going to be down three places on where he should be. So his bad luck is in already.
Well, that's true. It was, you should probably count his lucky stars. There was a time when Alonso's errant wheel went bouncing across the track, and there was talk of him missing an entire race. So at least Webber's in it. He had the worst possible luck, what with his fuel dramas. Lack of fuel and his tyre dramas. There's something else happened as well, didn't it? I'm sure Webber had a multitude of problems to overcome.
Crashed into Verne, which is why he's got the penalty.
Yes, that's the other thing. Yes, that's right. Verne turned in on him when he didn't expect him to, which perhaps... he's a Toro Rosso driver, so you might expect him to leave the door open for a Red Bull driver.
But not if you're arguing against and for and team orders is all a big kerfuffle.
Yes.
You can't go around expecting things.
It did occur to me that, I mean, if Toro Rosso were have been told to leave the door open for Red Bull drivers, that maybe neither of those drivers think Mark Webber's a Red Bull driver now anyway.
Oh dear.
They thought he was the opposition.
It's all gone wrong.
It's all gone wrong for Mark, no question about it. So whatever happens, he cannot possibly have as bad a weekend in Bahrain as he did in China, surely.
I had to make my predictions today. And I went for Vettel for pole position, which is far out there, I would say. Wouldn't you? Vettel, pole position? It's not like he's ever done that before.
Wow, what are your odds on that?
But I'm going safe this week, whereas last week for China, for some reason I went Massa for pole. I don't know what got into my head.
He was on the front row of the race before. Hmm. Maybe you let that influence you a little too much. I don't think Massa will be on pole this race. I'm going to put my money on... Kimi, I think will be on pole.
You see, I went for Kimi for the win in China and he came second. So I was close. This is progress. My curse has lifted. Mm-hmm. People that I predict are not crashing out willy-nilly. And this week I have gone for Hamilton for the win because it seems like they might do it.
See, Mercedes, I don't know if their pace is genuinely in it for the long run.
They didn't look that good in practice.
I cannot shake the feeling that they've just been... The cards have all fallen in their favour in the first three races. Is it three races we've had so far? It feels like more. The first three races, it's all gone Mercedes' way, or at least Lewis Hamilton's way. And I cannot just shake the feeling that they just generally don't have the pace it looks like they do have. And so, no, I don't think it'll be Lewis's his first win. It would be nice if it was, but I don't think it'll be his first win for Mercedes.
Who are you saying then?
Well, Fernando was extremely dominant in China. I mean, that guy could have won that race with his eyes closed and his hands tied behind his back and drive him in reverse.
You know, I don't think he could have.
I think he probably could have. I think that was one of the most dominant victories we've seen for a long time. He made it look incredibly easy. So, I think that Ferrari has even got more pace to
Massa for the win
reveal.
Then. No.
You know what? If Massa manages to hook up the, you know, to get everything perfect, to get his qualifying decent, to understand the tyres, to get some lucky breaks with his pit stops, because he was slightly scuppered with the way the stops fell in China. If he managed to get some decent breaks, he could definitely be a podium contender. But I'm going to go for Alonso for the win.
We've had a few bits of feedback this week or over the past couple of weeks since we did a show. You can leave your feedback at sidepodcast.com/contact. You can email me christine@sidepodcast.com or you can tweet us @sidepodcast. This is from Davin, who just had some nice things to say. He said, "Mr. C and Christine, I just wanted to take a moment and give another cheering wave of approval for Sidepodcast. Your show is one of the only podcasts that I continuously run to my computer to download or make sure I have an episode on my mobile. The natural conversation between the two of you doesn't make the show seem forced. Most importantly, the two of you are easy and fun to listen, even when you're recording your live streams. Most importantly, a show like Sidepodcast gives a guy like me inspiration that one day I may be able to share my enthusiasm with someone special, like the two of you do." Huh, are you special?
I get to share my enthusiasm with someone special. I don't know what you get, really. What do you get out of this deal? I am curious. I totally get what I, you know, it's obvious what I get. I get to discuss Formula One with someone who's lovely and gorgeous and intelligent and smart.
Is this to make up with it for everything that you said at the beginning?
I didn't mean what I said.
Davin says, may you continue to enjoy your excellent work and thank you for sharing with all of us. Well, thank you, Davin.
That's
we
a really nice bit of feedback.
Yeah, I mean, lots of podcasts and things don't like to read out the feedback that is just patting them on the back, but we do.
Well, yes. I mean, it's a very British thing not to to be too self-congratulatory, but we don't get very much of it. So, you know, let's take it
while... revel in the stuff we've got.
We'll take what we get.
We also had a slightly shorter one from Phil, who said, hi, Christine. Over the past year, I've really submersed myself into F1. Your site has assisted with this. Thanks.
Oh, well, that's nice. And who was that? I totally missed the name.
That was from Phil.
Oh, Phil. Oh, yay.
Now, a different Phil, he would like to disagree with us. See, this is the kind we normally get.
And we're back.
He says, hi, guys. Just a minor point regarding your discussion about Infinity in the last podcast. I'm not 100% sure what your sources are, and they may be absolutely correct. However, if you look a little closer at the relationship between Red Bull and Infinity, there's more to it than you might have realised. Infinity is the luxury brand of Nissan. Nissan own a controlling stake in Renault. As I understood it, this is a deal supported by Renault to promote the Infinity brand. It's not a dispute or disagreement between the two companies, quite the opposite. The group company, Nissan, are simply trying to push a different brand in Europe using title sponsorship on a car they pretty much own anyway. I might be completely wrong, of course. Please keep up the good work, Phil.
We did get some feedback in the comments on the exact same subject. I am absolutely aware of this, and I think we've talked about it in the Joe show, because Joe is way more educated on the comings and goings of car companies than I am. But the gist of it, as I understand it, is correct, except for I don't think either Renault or Nissan have a controlling stake in either company. It's more like a token share swap. So it's not like Renault don't get to make calls about Nissan's marketing strategy and vice versa. The two are intertwined, but Renault still want to get their fair share of credit for producing the engine. And this is the key thing. And perhaps in the last podcast, which I think was the interview we did with Jordan, perhaps I didn't make it clear enough, or perhaps it sounded like I confused myself, but
it sounds like a confusing situation.
There's a lot of crossover. It's the car industry. There's a lot of consolidation going on in all the parts of it, because no one has any money. No one's buying cars. It's very difficult. What Renault want, as far as I understand it, is credit, or more credit, for the engine that they built that powered Red Bull to however many championships it was. Is it three championships in a row now? They've all been Renault-branded engines. Infinity have their huge logo on the side pods and on the rear wing and all over the car. And Renault don't get that kind of credit. And they want that. Essentially, the people who make the engine just want more credit for the work they put into it, and they get more of that at Williams or with Caterham, where you don't have this cross branding exercise going on.
There is a quote that you actually dug out in the comments from Carlos Tavares at Renault, who said, we are frustrated by the lack of recognition we get for beating the likes of Ferrari and Mercedes. It is true that I think we deserve better, because they don't get that from Williams, where they're not beating Ferrari, Mercedes. But it is interesting, because to me, it is Red Bull Renault, even if they do keep wanting us to call them Infinity. Well, it's not going to happen.
The thing that's sort of missing in that is that Ferrari also manufacture the chassis, and Mercedes now manufacture the chassis. So that's why they get more recognition, because they are more than just the engine. They are the engine and they are the car.
It's the whole package. Mm.
Whereas Renault and Red Bull, they literally are just the engine. And there is some interaction in terms of, I think it was Renault who came up with the exhaust blown diffuser concept. So there is, which obviously involves aero parts of the car and involves more integration. But essentially, they just built the engine and they built the back end that powers it. Whereas with Mercedes, they're obviously doing all the aero work, and with Ferrari, they're doing all their own aero work. So they should get, you know, those teams should get more credit and more exposure, because they are taking a bigger risk by owning and running their own team. Renault used to do that, but thanks to Flavio Briatore, they ran away screaming and don't want anything to do, you know, they only want to be an engine partner now. And it's very, very hard as an engine partner, because engines are hidden, they are covered almost entirely.
See-through cars. That's what we need.
See-through cars. That's a genius idea. You're absolutely unimaginably awful for marketing because you lose all of that space. But you would see the engine.
Yeah.
Actually, that could be Renault's answer. Without that, the engine is obviously inside the car. It's covered. You can never see it and no one cares. And long as Renault continues to be an engine supplier and only an engine supplier, nobody will care.
The only time anyone takes any notice of the engine is when it blows up.
When it goes wrong, you'll hear all about it as you
always
did.
Always the way.
As you did when Red Bull blamed Renault for something else. The alternator issue with Vettel. They gave Renault an unimaginable amount of grief over that. So whenever it goes wrong, it's all Renault's fault. But when it goes right, it's Red Bull who got it right.
I think that's it for this Feet Up Friday, another podcast done. I hope that everyone enjoys the race this weekend. But I guess if you don't enjoy the race, then we don't want to know about it.